NPR.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the Livingston Manor and Roscoe school districts are merging. Now what? Districts are holding a town hall meeting this week to provide an opportunity for the community to learn more about the unification process, as well as the creation of the new 7-member school board. We'll speak to Dr. Robert DeFore, District Superintendent of Sullivan-Boces, who's co-leading the meeting. Dr. Hope Lecker is an educator, artist, community volunteer, and author. Her writing appears in the best-selling books Mission Hope, The Power of Love. We'll talk to her about her contribution.
Mr. Bob Orovec says temperatures in some areas have been frigid.
Low temperatures on Monday morning, still pretty cold across the middle part of the country, as low as minus 15 across the international or across northern Minnesota, International Falls. But generally, over the next 2 days, temperatures east of the Rockies are going to be below average, and then temperatures west of the Rockies will be above average.
The storm has cut power to many people from Missouri to southern Maryland. The tracking site, poweroutage.us, says that more than 112,000 customers in Virginia don't have electricity. Almost 90,000 are out in Kentucky. President Biden is going to New Orleans today. The White House says he'll mourn with families who lost loved ones in last week's attack on Bourbon Street. 14 people were killed and dozens of others wounded in the attack. Meanwhile, the NFL, the New Orleans Saints, and Saints team owner Gail Benson say they're donating $1 million to support the victims. Stocks opened higher this morning as U.S. Steel goes to court to salvage its sale to a Japanese steelmaker. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 260 points in early trading.
U.S. Steel and its Japanese have been pursuing legal remedies after President Biden moved to block the sale on national security grounds. In a lawsuit filed in federal court in Washington, the companies accused the president of violating their due process rights and interfering with a good faith regulatory review. They say the president was trying to curry favor with the Steelworkers Union, which opposed the deal. U.S. Steel is headquartered in the politically important swing state of Pennsylvania. A separate lawsuit targets the international president of the Steelworkers Union and a rival steelmaking company, Cleveland-Cliffs, for trying to scuttle the $15 billion sale. U.S. Steel says it remains committed to defending the transaction. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow's up 280 points. This is NPR. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is holding a news conference later this morning. He's expected to discuss his political future. Trudeau has been under pressure to quit as members of his Canadian Liberal Party track polls that suggest they could lose an election. The Liberal Party has governed Canada for nearly a decade. In a post on X today, Elon Musk called the government of Britain, a key U.S. ally, quote, tyrannical. Musk's timeline on X has been filled with vitriol for British politicians in recent days. That's worried Britons and prompted a rebuke from the prime minister. NPR's Lauren Freyer reports from London.
Elon Musk has been fixated on a child sex abuse scandal from about 15 years ago, in which gangs of mostly British Pakistani men were convicted of grooming mostly white British girls. The far right seized on this. Musk has falsely accused Prime Minister Keir Starmer, who was a top prosecutor at the time, of failing to go after child rapists. And he wrote that Starmer should go to prison. Asked about this, Starmer told reporters,
"Those that are spreading lies and misinformation as far and as wide as possible. They're not interested in victims. They're interested in themselves."
Britons are worried about what this row might mean for U.S. policy, with Musk slated for a role in the incoming President Trump's White House. Lauren Freyer, NPR News, London.
Pope Francis is naming a new archbishop for the Washington, D.C. Archdiocese. It's Cardinal Robert McElroy of San Diego. He would succeed Washington Cardinal Wilton Gregory, who is retiring. Again, on Wall Street, the Dow's up 300 points. It's NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Your Part-Time Controller, the nonprofit accounting specialists, providing financial management services to support stronger nonprofits who make the world a better place. Learn more at yptc.com/NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On December 19th, voters in the Livingston Manor and Roscoe Central School Districts approved a proposal to merge the districts via centralization.
Now, the Livingston Manor and Roscoe Central School Districts are inviting residents, families, and community members to a town hall meeting this Thursday to learn more about the unification process, as well as the creation of a new 7-member school board. Superintendent John Evans of the Livingston Manor and Roscoe Central Schools, along with Dr. Robert DeFore, District Superintendent of Sullivan BOCES, will lead the meeting. And Dr. DeFore joins us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here. Can you explain your role in the unification process of the two districts? How is Sullivan BOCES supporting this transition?
Well, as the district superintendent, I am the commissioner's representative in this region. Now that the two districts have determined that they are going to join together through centralization, my responsibility is to oversee the mechanics of making that happen, and in particular of supervising the election of a new Board of Education that will determine what the new district will look like, how it will be formed, et cetera.
Okay. And so we've talked about this and the advantages of merging, but can you, from your perspective, explain some of the biggest advantages of merging the Livingston Manor and Roscoe Central School Districts?
Livingston Manor and Roscoe have been sharing services for over 20 years. They share athletics. They share academic programs. This will allow them to come together and fully share resources to provide better programming for the students of both districts. The centralization has been incentivized with a significant increase in aid over the next 14 years. It'll come out to about $2 million in additional aid per year over the 14 years, so that the district is going to be able to thoughtfully plan their move forward. And at the central of those plans is increasing opportunities for children.
And do you see this unified school district or, helping benefit children academically as well as, community engagement?
I think it will benefit all of the students of Livingston Manor and Roscoe in all facets of their life, specifically by offering them more academic opportunities.
So the town hall meeting on Thursday, January 9th, you're inviting folks to learn more about the process. But as you mentioned, there's going to be this process of selecting the school board, the new school board. How does this newly formed 7-member school board get selected, and what will the main responsibilities be?
Okay, so the town hall on Thursday, the primary focus is the creation of the new school board. In addition to the centralization question, on the ballot on December 19th were two other questions. One was, if centralization was approved, how many members would the new school board consist of? And they had an option of 5, 7, or 9. And the length of terms that those members would serve, 3 or 5 years. And the decision was that they wanted a 7-member school board that would be elected to serve a 3-year term. What we're going to talk about on Thursday is the procedure for making that happen. We are going to be opening up for nomination for the school board. The deadline for the submittal of those nomination forms will be January 23rd, and the date of the vote for the new school board will be February 13th. The qualifications to serve on the new board are, according to Ed Law, Section 2102, the individual must be able to read and write. The individual must be a qualified voter of the district, and the individual must be a resident of the school district for at least 1 year prior to the election. Petitions for nomination must bear the signatures of at least 25 qualified voters of the Livingston Manor Roscoe Central School District. A qualified voter is an individual who meets each of the following criteria: is at least 18 years of age, be a citizen of the United States, and has been a resident of the school district for at least 30 days. The nominating petitions must be submitted, as I said before, by Thursday, January 23rd, 2025. And those petitions can be served either at the district office of Roscoe or the district office of Livingston Manor. The actual, there will be a drawing for ballot position, which will also be held on January 23rd, 2025 at 7 p.m. in the Livingston Manor Central School District. So all of the candidates will have an opportunity to appear in person by proxy to draw their ballot position for the election on February 13th. And finally, the election will be held in the Livingston Manor Central School District on Thursday, February 13th, between the hours of noon and 8 o'clock. There will be the seven candidates that receive the greatest number of votes will be elected to the new seven-member board. The top three vote-getters will get a three-year term, which will expire in June 30th, 2028. The next two top vote-getters will get a two-year term, which will expire in June 30th, 2027. And the final top two vote-getters will receive a one-year term, which will expire on January 30th, 2026.
How will the new school...
So that's a summary...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's a summary of the process that we'll be discussing at the town hall meeting. We'll also be answering any questions individuals may have, and it will be culminating in the election of a new Board of Education for the centralized district on February 13th.
So with this criteria and this discussion to make sure people understand how this all works, how does the new school board structure ensure some representation from both the Livingston Manor and Roscoe communities?
All of these will be at large seats. So the voters will have an opportunity to vote for that concept. It's going to be up to the voters what the composition of this board is going to look like. But all of the seven seats are at large seats. There are no seats reserved for one community or another.
And do you have any concerns about the formation of the new school board, or how do you hope to see these concerns addressed?
I don't have any specific concerns. I know that there are individuals in both communities that are interested in seeing this process forward. I would not be surprised if individuals who currently serve on either the Roscoe or Manor board put their names up as candidates. But I think we will have a very well-rounded board, ultimately, that is elected, that will represent the newly centralized Livingston Manor and Roscoe School District very well.
And we mentioned at the beginning your role in this unification process and the role of Sullivan BOCES to support the transition. What other resources or support can residents expect from BOCES and from you as they navigate the transition?
The lion's share of the work will be up to the new board. The new board will be charged with getting a name. The new board will be charged with selecting a superintendent. The new board will be charged with negotiating with the various unions in both school districts to bring commonality to contracts. It's a lot of work. You're going to have three things going on at the same time. You're going to have the Livingston Manor School District and the Roscoe School District winding down their affairs, and then you're going to have the newly centralized school district ramping up their affairs. And very often it will be the same people outside of the newly elected board that will be participating in these. The business official, the superintendent, the district clerk, the faculty and staff, there's going to be a lot going on in a very short period of time. BOCES will provide whatever logistic support the districts feel that they need, but primarily we're here to provide guidance. We're the intermediary between the newly centralized district and the state education department, so we will work at facilitating the communications between the newly centralized district and the state education department to assure that the information and data that the newly centralized district requires is provided in a timely manner so that they can move forward to the creation of the new school district.
Yeah, you mentioned the timeline is you know, compressed just on the 19th of December, this vote passed. And now here coming up January 9th, there's a town hall. Things are getting moved rather quickly. Would you encourage folks to in the community to attend this meeting and future meetings so that they may, if they're uncertain, they might learn more?
Absolutely. I'd encourage all of the community members to make an effort to attend on Thursday night. Yes, it is a very tight timeline, so we're trying to get as much information out as possible. Much of what we discussed is on the BOCES website. It is on both school districts' website. It has gone out by a robocall to the community, directing community members to their websites to get this information that we just discussed. If anyone cannot attend on Thursday night and they have a question, they can reach out to either Mr. Evans or they can reach out to myself, and we will do everything we can to answer any questions any constituent and community member may have.
And even though the main focus is going to be talking about the new seven-member school board through the process of unification and centralization, there is a chance for attendees to ask questions and share thoughts and discuss the progress at this meeting.
Yep, they can ask any question. If we don't have an answer, we will get the answer. But anyone attending the meeting will have an opportunity to ask as many questions as they wish.
We've been speaking to Dr. Robert DeFore, District Superintendent of Sullivan BOCES, about the upcoming town hall to discuss the Livingston Manor and Roscoe Central School District's merger. That is coming up. The town hall is coming up on Thursday, January 9th at 6 p.m. at the Livingston Manor Central School District Auditorium in Livingston Manor. And Dr. John Evans, the superintendent of both Livingston Manor and Roscoe Central School Districts, will co-lead that meeting with Dr. DeFore. Dr. DeFore, thank you so much for joining us and explaining this whole process.
Tim, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective, including the latest unemployment numbers for our region. That's coming from James B. Huntington next on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York, a newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Bill Williams. Join me for the Kingfisher Project Tuesday when my guest, Fred Munch, will discuss Clear 30, a digital cannabis break and long-term support program for adolescents and young adults.
How do you make it easy for someone to do something hard? That is at the core of how we try to build our behavior change program of Clear 30. So you can follow us and get tips to reduce your cannabis use for free.
That's the Kingfisher Project on the Local Edition, Tuesday night at 6, only on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it's Monday. That means we get to hear from James B. Huntington, our local economist and author with Local Economic Perspective. Good morning, James B.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, I hope you had a good weekend, James B., and let's talk about some of the latest numbers for unemployment in our listening area. You know, we get these numbers a little later, so November is the latest we have. What are those numbers looking like?
Sullivan County, 3% even, up 0.1%. Orange County, 3.2%, down 0.1%. Ulster, 3.1%, unchanged. Wayne County, 3.4%, unchanged. And Pike County, 4.2%, up 0.1%. However, the national reading was 4% for November, and that was up 0.1%. So we're still doing an excellent job, and in fact, in context, this month was better than October was for keeping unemployment very low in our area.
That's a good trend for the region, coming in under that national average then, too. It's the start of the new year. We got some tips for folks. What are some money moves that could help folks start off 2025 in a good position financially?
Okay, this is from the Motley Fool, actually, a well-regarded journalistic outfit on business and financial, especially financial and stock matters. Okay, their recommendation number one is get out of debt. Avoid credit card debt. If you're trying to earn 8 or 10% on investments, you're not going to pay any less than that if you have credit card debt. Number two, live below your means. Focus on spending less than you bring in. Whatever the difference is, yes, you can make a real difference in, of course, after-tax dollars. Three, have an emergency fund. I've always been skeptical about this, but it certainly helps if you have 3 or more months' worth of fixed expenses to cover in case you're in any risk of having a disaster of some sort. Number four, rebalance your portfolio. If you're splitting up between stocks and bonds, have a look at where it is now, and maybe you'll need to move some from one to the other if some have done better and now it's not at the percentage you want. Five, make good use of retirement accounts. Consider a Roth IRA. That's a possible thing. It takes money after you've paid taxes on it, which is worse than the traditional IRA. However, when you get to withdraw, it's all tax-free. I don't think it's in every circumstances, but most of them. Most of the time, your withdrawals will be tax-free, and that's very good when you're older. You weigh the advantages here and get at least one of these things going. Six, set up a health savings account if you can, or an FSA, which is a flexible spending account. And health savings account, not everyone qualifies, but it's an advantage to contribute money because you can do that pre-tax and take it out without ever paying any taxes on it. A similar thing with the flexible spending account. Seven, update your beneficiaries. Look at who is benefiting from your accounts. If something happens to you, you may have people on there. If you had some changes in the interpersonal structure of your life, you may have people on there you would rather not be getting the money. Eight, get those estate planning documents in order. And that is, make sure you have them. At minimum, make sure you have a will and it's an appropriate thing and other things. There are powers of attorney you may want to have, a living will, guardianship designations. If you're a parent of minors, things happen. I mean, it's like the odds are way against it in most cases, but it's good things to get prepared so you don't have to worry about them. Nine is sort of interesting. It says gamify your financial life. Think about challenging friends to see who can get higher credit scores. Take a look at what food you have, and you might have extra bunches of stuff, so minimize what you buy or don't buy anything. Try to spend less each week at the supermarket than the week before. See if you can do that. So these things may help.
I have a feeling that if I challenged you to who would save more money, that might be you. I would lose. So I don't know if I'm going to gamify mine, but it's an interesting concept of like trying to treat money management as like more of a game. So if you might try to save more, if you can get your head around that.
If you can get competitive with some people who have similar ideas, you may both benefit, really. And
I'm going to go with somebody who's not an economist to do that. How about
good idea.
How about are there other resolutions for 2025 that we should look for as we kind of have all this in mind at this time of year? You have these resolutions, these money moves at the beginning of the year that everyone talks about.
Okay, yes, we have five New Year's money resolutions. If it's says, if you want to be a millionaire, I know I used that phrase last week, so, but that's another thing this thing says. It's not all about becoming a millionaire. It's just about saving money. One is go to the grocery store less. And the point they have here is that they are trying, and to some extent or another at grocery stores, to get you to spend more money and spend less time if you can't do that, if you can't get away without going as often. Make a list, of course, and don't go right before dinner, especially because you will probably buy more. Two, invest like a millionaire. Some interesting ideas here on, you can get collectibles, which tend to go up, and the actual net cost, if you pay a fair price for them, is quite small. Even if you start with $100, if you buy a rare coin or stamps or a share, it says open a share of a classic car or something, if you can get in on something like that, any of those, it can be fun to own collectibles, and generally they do go up over time. Number three, pay off your debts. Same thing as before, credit card debt. We have some bad news about that also that came out last week, but I mean, credit card debt is about the worst as far as personal finance. If you have to, you have to, but generally it's the interest rates are so high. Four, audit your recurring subscriptions. Not only magazines, but apps. Look at anything that you are paying monthly or even annually and see, are you using it? Are you sure you want it? That sort of thing. It's amazing how many things can sneak onto your monthly bills that you're not really using anymore. So audit them at least probably once a year, once every 2 years, and see if there's any dead wood out there. Number five, point programs. It says your point programs are losing pace to inflation. There are a lot of people, a remarkable number of people, who will keep, say, frequent flyer miles piling up while they're paying cash or paying credit or paying for all their airline trips. So use them. If you have them, use them. They're not, time is not on your side with these things. If you can use them instead of money, it's probably a very good thing.
Yeah, good to check on those. I was trying to check on those recurring subscriptions myself as the new year started, because I think I have some things I don't even know I had. You mentioned credit cards. Credit card debt, credit card defaults have soared, can't talk, to the highest level in 14 years.
Yes, that's a depressing and disturbing sort of thing, that our national revolving credit card debt. Never mind. This is about defaults. This is about credit card defaulting. People who are being forced out of having their credit cards because they just can't pay the bills. That was $46 billion that credit card lenders wrote off, and that is 50% more from the first three quarters of 2023, the highest since 2010. So people are getting out of control. Some of this happened with the pandemic, where people did have extra money and not as many ways to spend it, but it's something that needs your attention if you're risking getting out of control, not to mention that it's pretty terrible for your credit rating if you have to lose a credit card in this way. So notably elevated flows into delinquency is a phrase from this thing. So take a look at where you are with this.
One of the key things we've been saying this morning at the beginning of the year, and whenever you can, try to get out of that credit card debt. Let's take a look at the numbers in the markets this morning. How did things change from last week?
Okay. Over the past week, we have gold early this morning, 26.36 an ounce. That's up $22. It's hanging around pretty well still in the low 26s. Silver, 29.76. That's up 38 cents. So it really kept pace, better than kept pace with gold. The ratio is now 89 to 1. It's still a little on the high side, but it's reasonable. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 42,732. That's down 260 for the week. The good news is it went down and then went back up again. So now we have more of an upward trend. NASDAQ was quite similar, 19,622, down an even 100 points over the past week. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 73.72, up over $3. That was surprising. I don't know if they're getting worried about something connected with a possible port strike for with longshoremen and such. But, yeah, we may see some creeping up at the pump. Bitcoin, 99,132. That's up almost 5,400. It bounced back. It went from about 103 to 93, and now it's going up to 99. Pound, British, 1.2493, down 79 hundredths. And the euro, 1.0365, down 49 hundredths. Both of these things are just drifting down, and I don't know when they will stop. They're is controversy of some sort going on with the Eurozone countries and with Britain financially, and the dollar is continuing to be very strong. Japanese 100 yen coin stayed even this time, 63 cents. So overall, a lousy but not awful week. We have a wide range of possibilities coming up over the next week and the next few months, and so we really don't know, but we will see.
Well, you'll keep
next week and beyond.
You'll keep an eye on it for us. Maybe it's just like a holiday season funk that we're kind of shaking ourselves out of.
Maybe. Funny things, funny, but there are certainly news items coming up real fast. So,
James B. Huntington is our local economist and author who joins us every Monday for a look at the economy. Thank you so much, James B. We'll see you next Monday.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Dr. Hope Lecker is here. She's a community volunteer and also an author. We'll learn more about her latest contributions after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's nearly time to blast off with the Retro Cocktail Hour. Daryl Brogdon here, inviting you to drop in at the Underground Martini Bunker for classic tiki tunes, private eye jazz, swinging movie music, and other stereo overstimulation. The Retro Cocktail Hour.
Wednesday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Forget the seatbelts. Fire up the cocktail shaker.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Dr. Hope Lecker is an educator, artist, community volunteer, and author. Her writing appears in the best-selling books Mission Hope, The Power of Love. Authored by multiple highly skilled writers, the book series invites readers to embark on a deeply personal journey as each contributor shares their life-altering and healing stories of love. And joining us now in the studio live is Dr. Hope Lecker. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit about this collection of stories and these different volumes of Mission Hope, The Power of Love. Tell us about your personal contribution to these books and your motivation to do it.
So I was approached simply because my first name is Hope.
Yeah, like, we should be clear, like, these aren't your books.
These are not my books, but I was approached. They're like, oh, your first name is Hope, be part of this series. I was like, okay. And then the volume three is Power of Love. And I thought, okay, well, I'm divorced. I have my family. I've been remarried. I don't know I'm the person to write. And then in speaking to Charlotte Murphy, who puts it together and compiles it and gets the authors, and Dominic Demansky, Motivation Champs Publishers, they were like, they tease you out through a phone call. And, you know, what do you have? What's your story? And really, it became a story of not so much my love, of my parents and what happened when my dad got sick, and seeing my mom every day by his bedside and realizing, wow, with all the ups and downs, that was a choice.
Yeah.
And going through that, and then really once, you know, going through my divorce and then getting remarried and just seeing the different kinds of love that are out there. And my approach to it was to write it like it's a diary entry.
Yeah.
And taking people through the years of when I was a kid, like I didn't know about love. What was teen love? You have a crush. There's a poster in your bedroom. So I made it lighthearted because it was a sensitive topic and I didn't want to cry every time I was writing it. So that's really became the Dear Diary and what is love and taking people through it and not regretting the choices.
And you say in your contribution here is that these are not from your actual diaries.
No.
It's just the format that you use.
Correct.
To express this thought.
Right. And Charlotte and Dominic gave all the authors a free reign of whatever format is best for you to express. And that was really the appeal for me to become part of it because they gave the topic, The Power of Love, for volume 3, and go with it. However it fits you.
Yeah. And there's a volume 4 that you're also in, which
yes.
is a different topic, Transforming Lives with Grace and Gratitude.
Yes.
I want to ask you about that in just
sure.
a second, but I want to just go back to this idea of like the power of love and because they tie together, right?
Yes.
These ideas. How do you think that this idea or love has played this transformative role in your own life or made an impact on your personal journey?
So for me personally, I will share that I don't think my parents had that. Oh, like it's a Hallmark movie, just coming off the holiday season. And there were ups and downs. And when choices could have been made, they were, nope, we're sticking together. And I think that was what, for me, really spoke to what love evolved into and seeing it, not being able to describe it so much, looking it up in the dictionary and saying, well, that doesn't really fit it. And it's not so much Cupid. Can we take it into real life? And that really, for me, became this is the power of love and seeing it in day to day and at different times in your life when it's crucial. Do you feel it? Because you need that power to continue.
Is that what you hope folks take away from reading this?
I hope what they take away from reading mine is that love is not the same for everybody. And it may not be a Hallmark movie. It may not be St. Valentine's Day. And yet we have those aspirations. And some people feel, I've had conversations with people where well, that's not my love, so I'm not in love. And I think for my part, it was, that's okay. Love is what you make it. Love is how you feel it. It doesn't have to be everybody else's perception of it.
So volume 4 of Mission Hope is about transforming lives with grace and gratitude. And the authors say, Char says, the beautifully crafted book captures the essence of seeking hope in times of despair. There's
yes.
that word hope again. Hope.
I know. I know. And it just keeps coming up. So, when she asked me to do this, I was at a point where my mother had been very sick. And I said, this is not going to be an upbeat. Like, I have to really think about this. And there was a point where I said, Char, I can't. I'm at the hospital every day with my mother, rehab. I can't get this done for you by the deadline. And she was very graceful, all and puns intended. And she said, I'll give you an extra week. Think about it. And then one day there I was, and I really made this, when you look at the page on 85, a word, words out of it. I took grace and gratitude and grateful. And I said, they do intersect. And it was at a point where we thought that my mom was going to pass away. And I really was reflecting on my life. And I sat with her and I said, Mom, if it's your time to go, we understand. And yes, there were tears. And then she got a new doctor. And this doctor said, do not call hospice. Give me a chance. And he's like her guardian angel. And our family's guardian angel. And I mentioned that in here, that it was okay if she had chosen to made a different choice, but she doesn't remember any of it, Tim. So when you talk to my mom, she doesn't remember how sick she was. And this doctor really came and had faith in her and gave us the faith to say, give me time. And we did. And there, before the grace of God, go I, knock wood. You know, she's alive today. She's going to be 93 in February.
Oh, well, good for her.
Yes.
That's fantastic. And you say in the title here, what I learned about guardian angels.
Yes.
And what was that sort of message you want folks to take away from this?
So growing up Jewish, I never really learned about angels. It wasn't a thing. I didn't think. And then I asked a few people and did a little bit of research as I was writing it. And there are a few, you know, in the Bible and there are some guardian angels that appear at different times. And I said, okay, there is something out there now. And I do feel that now. You know, when I look at my mom, we were not allowed to name the specific people because of legalities and things
in,
like that.
In the book, you mean?
Yes. You're not allowed to name the specific doctors. You're not allowed to name. So I allude to them. Mm-hmm. I did send them a copy because I wanted them to know how important it was. And I think what I want people to take away from my chapter is you don't know. Like, you can look at Grace and say someone is graceful. You know, I mentioned that there's survivors of the Holocaust who tell their stories and shared it with us last year during Voices of Survivors, and they do it without bitterness. They are grateful to be alive, and they show gratitude, and they share that. And it can be a very uplifting thing in a day-to-day life.
And in this contribution to this volume, you specifically mention traveling back in time to 1969 to Woodstock 1969, where you currently live here near Woodstock, Bethel. I mean,
and I live here now, and it was a time for me. It wasn't about going to the concert. It wasn't, hey, let's get in the car. We were in the car. Unfortunately, my uncle had died by suicide. So my recollection of it is not, oh, we're going on a road. My recollection is, get in the car. How fast can we get out of where we were and get to a different place on the East Coast and go through that? And it was years before I put 1969 Bethel Woods together with what happened in my life. And it changed my family's life. It changed where we went on vacation. But now being up here, you know, when I sat and made a timeline, it helped me put things into a perspective.
And so you're in these books, and the purpose of these books, I believe, as well, and I don't want to speak for the other authors or the editor, but it is to kind of bring these perspectives together so folks can have this sense of healing together, maybe by reading these different pieces. I mean, with so much uncertainty that's going on in the world, how do these like big themes of love and grace and, you know, even guardian angels help folks navigate it?
And Char is a, you know, four-time breast cancer survivor. So her motivation, her personal interest is have faith, have hope. No matter what you believe in, there is a common thread that can bring us together and help us connect with each other and heal. And I will announce for the first time that there is going to be a final volume, volume 5.
I was just going to ask you, is there another volume?
Yes. So volume 5 is coming out. Char and Dominic say that that might be the finale. And the topic of that one is joy.
Oh, good. And you'll be contributing to that one?
I will be contributing. That will be out sometime spring, summer of 2025.
We can look forward to a little joy from you.
Yes, summertime joy.
And, well, always bring us joy, but in this context, I mean.
Thank you. And if anyone has any more questions, they should reach out to me as a local resident author. I'd be happy to speak to them, share a copy, an autographed copy. It is available on Amazon also.
Yeah, and where can folks get more information about you and your work?
So they can connect with me at hope@hopescompass.org or also at hope4education.com. So both of those is where you can find me in my educational hat, my arts hat, which I am leaning more into with this arts and writing, and being expressive and letting people know that we can connect in so many different ways to bring commonalities together. And I think that's a very important frame of thought to have in the new year.
Yeah. And one thing we should also congratulate and mention you for and some joy in your life is that you are now an Impact Library Grant awardee.
Yes.
What is that? And so, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So in the spring in Parksville, we will be putting our first little free library there.
Oh.
So the books have arrived. I will be reading them. We will be building it. And it will be at the corner of Main and Short Street outside the famous building that is the pharmacy or was the pharmacy.
Yeah, so Sarah Litwin, who's the owner of that property there, and you are kind of putting this together. And
yes, and we hope it's the first of many that we will be able to spread throughout Parksville, Liberty, and Sullivan County.
That's great.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that.
Well, of course, you're doing great work in the community, and we appreciate all the hope and joy that you bring us all the time. Dr. Hope Blecker, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, the Wallenpaupack Brewing Company and their pints for a purpose. This is Radio Chatsko.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, who's in the mood for some nachos? Everyone. Well, we're serving up the history and the legacy of this iconic snack food.
The story of the nacho is really a story of the loss of an apostrophe. It's nachos special. And that's the original name.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. Weekdays at 3, our newsroom connects you with events around the globe. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. It's 1 hour each day that broadens horizons and takes you beyond our borders. Join me on The World, afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, every Monday most Mondays we're checking in with some of our friends over in the Northern Poconos as part of our collaboration with the Northern Poconos Chamber of Commerce for our Chamber Chats. And today we've got folks from the Wallen Pawpack Brewing Company. Good morning. It's Brad Beneski.
Correct.
Did I get it right?
Yes. Nailed it.
Becky, I didn't get your last name.
Ryman.
Becky Ryman. And Becky, you actually founded the company. Is that right? In 2017?
I did. Yep. That's correct.
And so give us a little bit about how it was founded and the journey to becoming what it's become today.
Sure. So I'm actually a Sullivan County resident and I grew up here in Eldred. I went to the University of Scranton, got an MBA in accounting and was working for a while and decided I kind of want to branch out and do my own thing. And my cousin started a brewery in the state of Florida and was doing really well. And what I really liked about it was what it did for his community. So I searched back and forth for a location and landed over on the other side of the river in the Poconos on Lake Wallen Pawpack and opened my brewery.
And the lake is beautiful. And you mentioned that the beers and the food crafted using locally sourced ingredients. How is it important for you guys to have that local part of your brewery as part of your identity?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like Becky said, what a brewery does for a community is just as fulfilling as, you know, brewing the beer and making the food and, you know, the business side of it. And I think it's great that we collaborate with a lot of local businesses and brew beers for special occasions. We've got a beer for the local baseball team. We've got a beer at the local arena. We try and get really involved in the arts and entertainment in the area and just kind of cultivate a really good communication and a good community with the surrounding area.
And the surrounding environment as well. Like, how does that influence you, that location right there on that lake?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of our beers you'll see in our names and just like the styles we brew, like we really reach around, you know, the Catskills and the Poconos. We have a lot of similarities and we try to bring that into our beers. Like, a lot of things are inspired by the mountains, the water, the landscape, the seasons. Like, we do lots of seasonal beer that we play on. And again, all inspired by like this amazing place where we get to live, work, and play.
Yep. And this time of year, we've got a good amount of ski and snowboarding themed beers that are having a lot of fun at the lodges right now. So,
Now, follow me here. Wallen Pawpack Brewing Company was named Pennsylvania Brewery of the Year by the New York International Beer Competition.
Yeah.
So how does that work? And what does that mean to you guys?
It's like Becky in a nutshell right there.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
All right, you're a Sullivan County resident.
One foot on both sides of the river all the time. Yeah. So New York has this international beer competition that they run out of the city. And we were pretty honored to participate in the last couple of years and had lots of medals that we've won. And yeah, we're named, I think, what was it, 3 times now? We're the
yeah, I feel yeah. like it's almost every time we submit.
The top brewery. Right? Yeah.
So out of the whole Keystone State, that's amazing. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And we had a couple more big accolades this year. We won a Great American Beer Festival medal, a World Beer Cup award, right, which was kind of our one that we were chasing for a long time. So
yeah,
we've brought home some really highly acclaimed awards to put the Poconos, which is really cool.
2025 is a big shoes to fill for 2024. Yeah. We had an awesome year.
A little pressure.
Just to show you that beer has no boundaries, I guess. But what does that mean for you guys and how does it impact your business?
So I think we're just always striving to improve, whether it's in our kitchen. Our head chef, Scott Jones, does an amazing job in the kitchen. Logan Ackerley, who's also a Sullivan County native, he came from Sullivan County. He's our head brewer, also knocking out some amazing beer. And, you know, both of them are just constantly continuing for improvements in what they do and striving for perfection. And the rest of the team is always there to support them, give our 2 cents. And it's we have this like really special group of people that make it happen every day.
Yeah, our team is killer. It's no matter what, you know, the brewing scene has been popping up all over the country. And as we said before, having a brewery in your town is great for your community. It's great for a good meeting place. And these medals, you know, it's great to get them. And I think what it says for us is it gives people confidence to come and know that the beer they get at our place is going to be really, really special. So,
yeah, I was reading like in terms of nationally, like the craft brewing or brewery trend seems to be getting saturated. But locally in New York and in Northeast Pennsylvania, that doesn't seem to be the case. You're bucking the trend here. Is part of that because of some of the mission that you have here, which is that community involvement? Do you think that helps with your success?
Yeah, I think that certainly helps. And then just like the flow of tourism we have. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in like rising tide raises all ships. And, you know, we've just got this great business community around us. And we all support each other. And just bringing in more businesses, more great places to stay, more things to do is just like rising everyone's tide. And you know, people need to eat and drink, right? So they're looking for cool things. They're looking for new things. And craft beer kind of helps fill that and like bridge it all together for us.
I was teasing this earlier, the Pints for a Purpose program. Tell us more about that and some of the other local causes you've supported.
Yeah, so we were doing a Pints for a Purpose program for a while. Where we'd pick a different cause, put a beer on tap in the tap room. So we've kind of rotated from that into doing more can structure. So we'll do some like cans once in a while for a charity. We've supported causes like Pink Boots, which are more national, and then we've also done some local causes. BK Hope's 5K, the cure for cancer. He does his 5K every year over in Holly. We've supported them quite a bit. So, you know, we try to do that. We've done fundraisers. We have two locations where people can hold events that we've helped out with. So we try to really reach out in the community and do as much as we can on that front as well.
Did you want to say something there?
Yeah, yeah. Like Becky said, dropping the second location, which we've reinvigorated recently. The Wake Zone, about 3 miles up the road from our main brewery, is a six golf and professional sports simulator that is also doubles as our tap room. So the real purpose for that was to create a space for in the summer when we're really like overloaded at the brewery and there's maybe a half an hour wait time. Someone wants to just try our beer. They could hop up to the Wake Zone, maybe book a simulator, grab a couple pints, check out the beer garden, play some games. And it's actually been really picking up recently, actually.
One thing I noticed about the beer scene around here is that there's a sense of camaraderie among the business owners of these breweries. Do you find that is the case? Because I, you know, you see them and I wonder like, oh, are they competing? And of course, there's a little bit of that, but really they seem to be all kind of trying to share the same idea and get this out into the community.
Absolutely. I think everyone does their own take on craft beer, which makes all of us unique in our own way. And then I think consumers really like to experience like the differences, right? And we always try to educate our staff to like, go pick your favorite brewery besides us, you know, like go taste the beer and go find something else to talk about and send customers there, because the more places people can go experience, the longer they're going to stay, the more they're going to want to come back. And we've done like collabs with local breweries. We're constantly like, you know, sharing ideas or, hey, you got this hop. Hey, we're short on this. Hey, I need cans. Hey, you want to, you know. Yeah. So
you're trading hops.
Yeah, yeah. It happens. Yeah.
We've water even.
So oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, right. Wow. This is true. Yeah. But yeah, it's neat, you know, and there's as us being a bigger brewery, there's a lot of things we could do to help smaller breweries. So yeah. we've really tried to do that. And it's been a lot of fun to work with them.
What's the community reaction been for you guys?
Overwhelmingly positive, yeah. Since day one. I mean, it's just amazing. It blows my mind to still stand at the door once in a while and kind of just talk to people as they're coming in. And I'm like, is this your first time here? Yeah. You know, this is amazing. And I'm like, we're 7 years in and we still have all these new people walking
right.
in.
Which I just found out about you.
Yeah. But yeah. I love it. I love that. And I love seeing just the reaction, the experience. It's awesome. Yeah.
And like Becky said, like the flow of tourism really, really supports us in the summer. But the locals in the off season, quote unquote, we actually just developed instead of a mug club, we've got a coin club. So you come in, you almost get a challenge club. And that really kind of is like, you know, we were thinking of our locals that come in more than a couple times a month or a couple times a year. So you get a coin, you get all these benefits throughout the year and an end of year party and stuff like that. So that's been overwhelmingly positive, too. We couldn't believe it. We didn't know how many coins to buy, and we have to buy more now.
So. Folks like that. I have a quarter. Is that how it works?
Not just any coin.
We'll talk after. Okay, got it. So 2025, you mentioned, you know, you've got some things coming. Well, do you have some things coming up? And how do you kind of balance that like need for a little bit of innovation, but also maintaining your authenticity?
Yeah. So as we grow, it's been more challenging for sure. So we've definitely expanded like our distribution footprint. And in 2025, we're hoping to maybe get some beer over here into New York because right. The border is a little bit of a challenge, but we're working on that. But yeah, we've really dialed in our SKUs. We have our flagships, our seasonals, and then we're still leaving room for like those experimental beers we want to do. And I think in 2025, we have more like plans to push the boundaries, you know, trying to dial in some of our flagships a little more, you know, just to really make them the best they can be. And again, just always pushing that envelope for quality and striving to be like a really top class brewery.
Yeah, I mean, out of our flagships, I think we've got a pretty unique portfolio off the gate. So like our hazy IPA, which IPAs are almost a cost of entry, a largemouth hazy IPA. If you're not making an IPA in the craft brewing business, it's almost like an extremely uphill battle, much more than it already is. Our cream ale, pop pack cream ale, is a really nice entry level. Almost like if somebody comes in looking for like a light beer, that's our number one go-to right there. And those two brands actually pretty much like go back and forth on which are leader in volume. And then we've got a Bavarian style Hefeweizen called Holly Hef that is our number three. So then we've got some really fun seasonals and series. We're coming out with a cocktail inspired sour ale series this year. We've got our Lake Hayes double IPA series, which is probably our number one series. And then our rotating IPAs, which, like I said, 45% of all craft beer sales are IPAs. So you got to keep your foot steadily in that trend.
Got to keep the base happy there. Do you get folks making suggestions for things, too, that they like to see you experiment with?
Yeah. Well, our whole brewing team is very much like beer-flavored beer. But we know that there's a lot of interest and curiosity out there. So whenever we hear something out in the tap room and we like kind of think about it, we're like, oh, let's put our spin on it and stay true to ourselves, but also give the customer something that they want to come and try out.
Yeah.
We do a fun series too with our staff where we actually let our staff brew with our brewers. So each staff member comes up with a beer or a concept for a beer that they would like to see. And some of those beers have actually turned into either, beers that went full scale on our brew house or they went into a new series. We have a cocktail inspired series coming up. Yeah. Grand Croon. one of our award winning beers was actually inspired off of a pilot batch that one of our staff did with the
What's that? What are those flavor profiles?
So we the Grand Croon is a cherry version of our Croon Belgian Golden Strong Ale.
Ooh, cherry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's neat. Everyone kind of pitches in their ideas and it's fun. It's like a big fun family.
Okay, I'm just going to personally ask it to like avoid pumpkin spice if you can.
it's also unavoidable.
Our brewer would love you for that because he doesn't like to make that beer, but yeah.
tell us where folks can get more information about the brewing company, Wild Pop-Up Brewing.
Sure. So our website has lots of information. There's all sorts of information about events in our tap rooms, beer dinners, all the fun things we do. The WakeZonePA.com also has information about our second location. And then you can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and all those wonderful social media places. Or just come over and see us in Holly. We're there 5 days a week right now. Yep. So it's a great place to be.
Good time to come visit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you. Rebecca Ryman and Brad Benensky from the Wall and Paul Pack Brewing Company. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you
for having us.
All right. That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can hear this program and all of our local programs at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
The Washington National Cathedral hosts a funeral service for former President Jimmy Carter before his final journey home to Plains, Georgia. Other presidents will be on hand, and we will bring it all to you on your radio, on your phone. I'm Steve Inskeep. Join us for live special coverage Thursday morning from NPR News.
Starting at 9:30 Thursday morning, here on Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. We're not getting the snow that they're experiencing throughout much of the country, especially the mid-Atlantic, but we are going to get a cold wave, even colder than it is now. Today, high of 27, increasingly windy tonight with low clouds and a low of 10. And through the week, it's going to be a little bit colder, high 20 on Tuesday, 17 for the high on Wednesday, and a low of 9. Thursday's high 18, warming up to 26 for Friday. It's 11 o'clock.